This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. The Taliban say they have taken control of Panjshir, the province north of Kabul. The province was the last holdout of anti-Taliban forces in the country and the only one the Taliban had not seized during their sweep last month. Thousands of Taliban fighters overrun 8 districts overnight, according to witnesses from the area. The anti-Taliban fighters had been led by the former vice president and the son of the iconic anti-Taliban fighter Ahmad Shah Massoud, who was killed just days before the 9/11 attacks in the United States. Mutinous soldiers in Western African nation of Guinea have detained the president Alpha Conde in an apparent coup. The video of the president in military custody was released after hours of heavy gunfire broke out Sunday near the presidential palace. An army colonel also seized the public airwaves, telling the nation that Conde's government is dissolved and the constitution invalid. The defense ministry initially claimed the attack had been thwarted. Conde had been in power for more than a decade, but saw his popularity plummet after he sought a third term last year, saying that the term limits did not apply to him. In Thailand, it's the worst coronavirus surge, yet lockdown measures have reduced what little Bangkok's have-nots have to zero. Their plight has given rise to volunteer groups working to ensure that the poor survive. The volunteers have supplied more than food. They brought oxygen to patients stuck at home, tested whole communities, and helped open isolation facilities so sick people do not infect their families. This is VOA News. Most of New Zealand will move out of lockdown Tuesday, except for the largest city of Auckland, which will remain in the strictest type of lockdown until at least next week. That's according to the government. The nation has been battling an outbreak of the Delta variant of the coronavirus since last month. All recent cases have been found in Auckland, including 20 that were found on Monday. Mexican border agents and police broke up a caravan of hundreds of migrants who had set out from southernmost Mexico. It was a fourth such caravan officials have raided in recent weeks and days. A group of about 800 was made up largely of Central Americans, Haitians, Venezuelans, and Cubans. They'd spent the night at a basketball court some 40 kilometers from the border, where they had been kept awaiting processing by Mexican immigration officials. Shortly before dawn, immigration agents backed by police with anti-riot gear went into the crowd, pushing many into trucks and sending others fleeing. The Tokyo Paralympics have closed to end a saga that began 8 years ago, when the Japanese capital was named the host city of the International Olympic Committee. The Paralympics ended a 13-day run in a circus-like ceremony at the National Stadium. The Olympics closed almost a month ago. These were unprecedented Olympics and Paralympics. They were postponed for a whole year and marked by footnotes, asterisks, and no fans, except for a few outlying venues away from Tokyo during the Olympics, and a few thousand school children who were allowed into Paralympic venues. Recapping one of our top stories, the Taliban now say that they have, in fact, taken control of Panjshir. It's a province north of the capital, Kabul. The province was the last holdout of anti-Taliban forces in the country. It was the only province the Taliban had not seized during their sweep just last month. Thousands of Taliban fighters overran 8 districts of Panjshir overnight. That's according to witnesses from that area. The anti-Taliban fighters had been led by a former vice president who was also the son of the iconic anti-Taliban fighter, Ahmad Shah Massoud. He was killed just days before the 9/11 attacks in the United States. More at voanews.com. Again, voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, September 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. It appears Guinean President Alpha Conde has been overthrown by the military.
The military man you see on the video, his name is Doumbouya. He is the commander of the special forces. What he's been saying is, because of the crisis, they have decided to take over.
We'll get regional perspectives on the apparent coup d'etat in Guinea. Gambian President Adamant Barrow's party forms an alliance with former President Yahya Jammeh's party. And a South Sudan rebel leader says he's committed to negotiations for sustainable peace.
We want to resolve the root causes of the conflict in the country so that we achieve a sustainable peace. Because we believe that unless the root causes of the conflict are addressed and resolved in the country, South Sudan will never see any peace.
And a big political alliance in Senegal ahead of local and legislative elections. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Guinea, the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party says the capital Conakry was quiet on Sunday following an apparent military takeover. Fayyami Limono says an announcement by Mamadi Doumbouya, commander of special forces in the Guinean army, claimed the military had taken over the government and arrested President Alpha Conde. But Milimono says it was not clear whether the military was in full control of the entire country.
The military man you see on the video, his name is Doumbouya. He is the commander of the special forces. What he's been saying is, because of the crisis, which is not only political but also economic and social, they have decided to take over. But it's very early to confirm that they have the control of everything at this time. We've been seeing pictures of the president apparently arrested, but no one can ascertain that all of that is true.
You saw the photos of President Alpha Conde in some kind of a shirt that is not buttoned up, but people in Guinea are not quite sure if the military people have full control of the government.
So far, we have heard that some of the members of the government are arrested. I have heard about the Ministry of Security, and I have heard about the Prime Minister. I have heard about the Minister of Defense. But all those pieces of information, we get in them without being able to verify them. Because all over the city, the situation seems apparently calm for now. But the national radio, all the public media, I don't seem to see that they are still being controlled by anybody.
What type of programming are the national radio and television carrying right now?
The programs are the usual program. They pass in even the journal that they passed last night. So nothing is being said on the national radio about everything going on.
Mr. Milimono, you and I spoke earlier, and we were talking about what could be responsible for gunfire in Guinea. And we were talking about the last election and the economic situation. Describe for us, what is the situation politically and economically in Guinea?
The situation is very tense, economically and politically. As I said, after the last elections last year in October, I would say nothing is over yet, because the results of those elections are not accepted by everybody, which is a political crisis, and it is still continuing. We have many people actually in jail, the opposition members, and you have borders actually closed with Senegal, Guinea-Bissau, and recently with Africa, because of Ebola information we had here concerning a Guinean who went there. So actually, the social, economic, and political situation is very tense.
Fayemini Muno is the leader of the opposition Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. A former special representative of the UN Secretary General and a former head of the UN Office for West Africa and the Sahel says African countries wanting to change constitutions, particularly affecting presidential terms, should make sure they have broad national consensus before implementing such change. At the same time, Mohamed Ibn Chamba says he is concerned about what he calls a slippage or a retreat from democracy in West Africa. Reacting to Sunday's apparent military takeover in Guinea-Conakry, Chamba says he feels a sense of disappointment. He says the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, does not bear any responsibility because all efforts were made by ECOWAS, the African Union, and the United Nations to dissuade President Alpha Conde from going ahead with a constitutional referendum to enable him seek what some Guineans called a third term.
I feel a sense of disappointment. It's a sad event that has happened in Guinea. It's a reversal of the democratic march of West Africa, of Africa. Another military intervention in politics on the African continent doesn't augur well for the consolidation of democracy, the establishment of stable constitutional governance. So certainly I feel disappointed that things have taken this turn in Guinea.
The last time we spoke, and I think we were talking about the situation in Mali, you said that perhaps West Africa was witnessing a slippage in democracy. Does ECOWAS bear some responsibility because the military takeover in Guinea did not happen in a vacuum?
No, this is an internal Guinean process which has not gone well. The ECOWAS, along with other actors such as the African Union, the United Nations, and many partners, particularly in the period from 2019 to 2020, leading up to the referendum to amend the constitution of Guinea and to allow the president to extend his mandate. All these partners were involved, trying in different ways to dissuade the president from proceeding with an extension of his mandate without success. And as a matter of fact, Guinean civil society and opposition parties were strongly mobilized to prevent the amendment of the constitution, which was forced through without broad national consensus. The result is that the elections that followed, both legislative and presidential, were hugely contested. In fact, up to now, they were never accepted by the opposition and a broad part of Guinean civil society. So a political and constitutional crisis was there, which unfortunately has turned out to have been the underlying cause of this coup d'etat, although it seems that the immediate cause may have been specific military grievances relating to salary reductions, which were announced a week ago.
I know ECOWAS has a standing policy on unconstitutional change of government. Do you think ECOWAS will apply the same policy, or do you think ECOWAS will recognize the military junta in Guinea?
What the reaction of ECOWAS will be, of course, ECOWAS has to be faithful to its principles, its protocols. ECOWAS has a very well-established and known policy of zero tolerance for military coup d'etat. So there's no way that the current situation can be accepted by the authority of heads of states and government of ECOWAS. I expect that the coup d'etat will be condemned. And of course, there will be calls for the release of the president and other detained Guineans. And of course, there will be every effort deployed by ECOWAS to ensure a speedy restoration of legal and constitutional rule.
Mohamed Ibn Chambers is the former special representative of the UN Secretary General and former head of the UN Office for West Africa and the Sahel. He was speaking with us from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. In the Gambia, former President Yahya Jammeh's Opposition Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Reconstruction Party, also known as APRC, has formed a political merger with President Adama Barrow's National People's Party, the NPP. The announcement was made over the weekend at a news conference. As Pandera Umbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina, there is opposition to the merger from within the APRC.
And I'm glad to report that the MOU agreement between the Alliance for Patriotic Reorientation and Construction and the National People's Party was signed on Thursday, 2nd September 2021.
Fabakary Tombonjata, leader of the opposition APRC, addressing journalists on Saturday at a news conference where he announced the merger that has been formed between the APRC and the NPP ahead of the December 4th presidential elections. The APRC lost the December 2nd, 2016 presidential elections to President Adama Barrow, with the longtime incumbent Jammeh defeated. Jammeh has since been living in exile in Equatorial Guinea. Jammeh's return to the Gambia was one of the agreements that they have signed with the NPP if Barrow wins the coming elections, according to Jata.
We have agreed that come Allah willing, 2021, and that we are able to succeed, that for us, the light of this country, the beacon of hope, His Excellency, Staff Professor Al-Hadi to be accorded the right to come back peacefully to his home country.
The promotion of national reconciliation was also part of the agreement that they signed. The APRC would play a key role in the new government if Barrow is re-elected, according to Jata.
We have agreed that after the formation of the coalition and the success in our election, there will be a coalition government where APRC will be part of the government.
Jata and his executive have been taking heat following the formation of the merger. They have been accused of selling out to Barrow, a charge that they denied. Lamine Tamba is the spokesperson for the APRC UK branch.
I thought the alliance was ill-advised and should not have happened. I think the alliance was probably made against the wishes of the general membership of the APRC. And as far as we know, with public information available against the party leader, supreme leader and flag bearer of the APRC, the former president of the Gambia, Yahya Jammeh.
Tamba has been leading a campaign to oppose the APRC-NPP alliance. He claimed that Jammeh hasn't given his blessing to the merger between the two parties, a claim Jata's executive denied. Jagan Gray Johnson is a Gambian political analyst.
The APRC has been a party in power for 22 years that, espoused, also propagated principles of dictatorship and tyrannical government. And as a result, if Adama Barrow tells us that this is what he prefers, it tells you that at the end of the day, nothing has changed.
The APRC camp, who are opposed to the merger, said Barrow is not a leader who should be trusted. They have accused Barrow of betraying his coalition partners to consolidate himself into power. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, September 6th. Last week, about 20 Senegalese opposition leaders announced an alliance ahead of that country's January 2023 local and legislative elections, followed by presidential election in 2024. According to them, they want to liberate the people of Senegal. Leading members include Khalifa Sall and Ousmane Sonko, the new emerging leader in Senegalese politics. Senegalese political analyst Ibrahim Akar says the opposition realizes that its best chance of defeating the ruling party is to come together.
There are three main parties. This is the party of Sonko, who is the new emerging leader in Senegal politics. You have the former mayor of Dakar, who is still somebody who is well respected in the country despite the problem he had with the state, and also because he has a lot of experience as a leading person in the former party, PS, Parti Socialiste. have a group of small parties that are mainly visible in the Dakar region as far as elections are concerned.
So where does it put the opposition, this alliance, in terms of the 22 local and parliamentary elections and eventually the 2024 election? Does it make the alliance stronger?
Two main situations which will decide on the result of the next election. One is the ruling party. There are so many candidates in that side that is quite difficult for the ruling party itself to come up with something that will be unifying them. The second aspect that I would like to highlight is the fact that in the opposition, you have one emerging leadership, which is Sonko and his allies. And I think those people will gain a lot of votes.
You mentioned the opposition leader, Usman Sonko, will probably be a strong candidate. But as you know, he is facing a rape charge. What has happened to that charge against Sonko? Has it been resolved?
Well, not yet, because there are a few problems in the judiciary. You know, the examining judge who was looking at that case passed away. He was not replaced, to my knowledge. And I think they are trying to find another judge who will be examining the case. Two, even the lady who accused him for rape came on live media suggesting that it was not rape, but they had an affair together, which will really water down the case from a rape to just somebody who was having an affair.
Ibrahima Khan is a Senegalese political analyst. He was speaking with us from Dakar. In South Sudan, the leader of the Rebel National Salvation Front, also known as NAS, says he and the South Sudanese Opposition Movement Alliance, SOMA, are committed to negotiations to bring about sustainable peace in South Sudan. General Thomas Cirillo and other members of SOMA have yet to sign the revitalized comprehensive peace agreement and are currently involved in the Rome talks with the South Sudanese government. Cirillo says he and the other peace holders want to address the root causes of the conflict in South Sudan because they are tired of seeing South Sudanese fight among themselves and kill each other. General Cirillo says South Sudan needs a new system of government that will deliver for the people.
National Salvation Front, with its allies in SOMA, we are not working to ratify the access agreement, which was signed in 2018. We want to resolve the root causes of the conflict in the country so that we achieve a sustainable peace. Because we believe that unless the root causes of the conflict are addressed and resolved in the country, South Sudan will never see any peace.
General, give me one or two pertinent reasons that you consider to be the root causes of the war for which you are not signing the agreement.
Yeah, thank you very much. The reasons are numerous, but I will tell you the main reasons. One, there is a failure of leadership in the country. Salva Kiir and his group, they have totally failed to govern our people. There is a serious corruption going on in the country. Our people are not even receiving salaries, despite the fact that there is oil money coming to the government, to the extent that our people, including the security apparatus and the army, are not receiving salary, and some of them are now almost 1 year. That is because of the corruption. There is no basic services to our people, be that health, education, and others. Our people is still drinking from rivers, from streams, like animals. Despite the billions of U.S. dollars that our people are receiving, the government is receiving, are from the oil money.
Why not come into the system and bring about change from within, rather than stay out?
James, how can you come to the system to bring about the change? On the 30th, last month, as I told you, now our people, a group of civil society, want to come out demanding their rights, demanding a better governance system in the country. But imagine, I think you might have come about this, a journalist, you should know this. The government came out with tanks and mounted vehicles with all that security apparatus, suppressed our people, and nobody was moving. This is the government that we have today.
So were you in support of that protest that did not take place?
We as National Salvation Front, together with our allies in SOMA, we are supporting the people of South Sudan in the different groupings, be that different civil society groups, be that our communities, for them to express their views in a peaceful manner and demand their rights in the country. So this group that tried to come out on the 30th, is part of the civil society in the country.
General Cirillo, your movement has been accused of abducting and killing government troops in Central Equatorial State. Also, the South Sudan Opposition Movement Alliance, of which you are a member, was accused this month by President Salva Kiir of killing civilians along the Juba-Nimule Highway. Your response?
This is not correct, James. This is a lie from Salva Kiir and his government. In fact, Salva Kiir was looking for a reason, for a pretext for them to launch operations, military operations against our forces in different parts of the country, not only in central Equatoria.
President Salva Kiir last week set conditions for resuming talks with the Opposition Movement Alliance. One of those conditions is that you must cease hostilities. Are you prepared to cease hostilities?
No, we are supposed to tell him to cease hostilities against us. As I said, you are now under attack in Kajukaji and around the town of Yei and also in Maridi. So the government is the one to cease hostilities. Our last round of talks in Rome early this year, we are supposed to sign declaration of principles because you are saying we must sign declaration of principles to examine our political commitment, to discuss the root causes of the problem, to bring about sustainable peace in the country. We did not finish all the points, and they said they are going to Juba for consultation. Until now, they did not come, and we are waiting for them.
General Thomas Cirilo Swaka is the leader of the rebel National Salvation Front of South Sudan. He would not disclose his location to us, except that he was speaking with us from his mobile headquarters. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with the African qualifying matches for the FIFA World Cup Qatar 2022, which continued with match day two fixtures taking place across the continent between Sunday and Tuesday. There were only three fixtures to close off a jam-packed week, which will promptly resume with a further seven fixtures scheduled for Monday in the busy international window for the African continent. Rwanda and Kenya got Sunday's proceedings underway in an East African meeting at the Stade Regional Nyamiramba in Kigali. The result left both teams winless after two rounds of fixtures and with a mountain to climb if they are to challenge for a place in the third round of qualifying. A spectacular overhead kick goal from Elmo Kambindu steered Namibia to a 1-0 win over Togo at the Stade du Kigu in Lome on Sunday. Victory moved the Brave Warriors top of Group H on 4 points, one ahead of Senegal, who are away to Congo in Brazzaville on Tuesday. In the final match of the day, Mustafa Mohamed scored in the final minute of stoppage time to earn 10-man Egypt a 1-1 draw against Gabon at the Stade de Franceville on Sunday evening. In today's matches, South Africa will target a home win in their second 2022 World Cup qualifying Group G match when they face Ghana at the FNB Stadium in Soweto. The West African side lead the way in the group standings after a win over Ethiopia in Cape Coast on Friday evening, with midfielder Mubarak Wakasu scoring the only goal of the game. Bafana Bafana vice captain Percy Tau described Ghana as a difficult side.
We have a difficult game against Ghana. We played them before, so we know each other well, and they won. So we're looking forward to that game. We just have to be confident and keep getting better.
The Black Stars, who are looking to return to the global showpiece after missing in the last World Cup in Russia, will be aiming to improve on the attacking play, according to coach Charles Akuna.
We are focused. We are here. We've seen South Africa against Zimbabwe. We have a strategy, and we believe that it will work. We believe that even if they change the style of play, we'll find an antidote to it and we'll move out of this place with 3 points.
One of the highlights of Monday's games will be in Abidjan, when Ivory Coast and Cameroon will slug it out in a Group D game as they meet at the Stade Olympique Alassane Ouattara in Abidjan. And in basketball news, Tunisia has successfully defended the AfroBasket title the North African country won in 2017. Former Dallas Mavericks center Salah Mejri scored 22 points to help the Tunisians win in a 78-75 victory over Ivory Coast on Sunday, the country's third AfroBasket tournament title in the past 10 years. Two-time champion Ivory Coast last won the title in 1985. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a great day. And that's it for this Monday, September 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will